This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman and you'll get a $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662. Or tryzonanow.com.
Welcome to another edition of Layla Weighs In. I'm Layla Mutin, your host, nutritionist at the Hoffman Center. Here on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I like saying that. Anyway, so I welcome all of your questions, comments, topics of interest regarding health and nutrition. You can email me. You can email to radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. So here we go. We're going into the holiday season, and guess what? I was reading, this is fresh off the presses, there is a new sugar substitute, not sure if we can call it a sugar substitute, in town. It's called allulose, and it's a new low-calorie sugar, according to the ad. And where am I reading this ad from? It's really more an industry insider. This is out of I was flipping in today's Dietitian magazine, and I happened upon this ad from the Calorie Control Council about allulose. And this is what they say: giving nutrition guidance to a population struggling with overweight, obesity, diabetes, health professionals are looking for ways to reduce overall calories in the diet. With the introduction of allulose, there is now another alternative and a sweetener. Allulose, also known as D-sucrose, is naturally occurring. It's a low-calorie sugar with a taste similar to regular sugar, but with 90% fewer calories since it is not significantly metabolized. Generally recognized as safe as a food ingredient by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, studies show allulose is non-glycemic, with no impact on blood sugar or insulin levels. So I went to allulose.com. I've been to Food Navigator. And let me give you a little more background. Now, first of all, allulose, also known as D-sucrose, D-sucrose, and I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, is spelled P-S-I-C-O-S-E. Anyway, so according to Food Navigator, which is all the breaking news on food and beverage development, allulose is the hottest rare sugar on the block, and it's gaining interest in the U.S. Rare sugars, quote-unquote, are becoming a buzz phrase in Japan, but interest in the U.S. is currently limited to industry insiders, with allulose increasingly an ingredient of interest, say representatives from Matsutani. Speaking with Food Navigator USA at the recent IFT show in Chicago, Yuma Tani, the deputy manager of Matsutani's overseas business in the research and development section, said that while there is a lot of interest in the U.S., there are no commercial retail products at this stage. So, rare sugar is becoming a buzz phrase in Japan. Consumer research performed by the company in 2015 showed that 40 to 50% of consumers knew the phrase. And in 2016, this year, it has increased to 60%. So allulose, also known as sucrose, is a monosaccharide, and it contains virtually no calories. It has the bulk, texture, and taste of regular sugar, and 70% of the sweetness. The sugar works well with high-potency sweeteners such as stevia and sucralose, and can be used to reduce or replace sugar in everything from beverages, yogurt and ice cream, to baked products, candies, salad dressings, gum, cereal, and sugar substitutes. It also browns during baking, depresses the freezing point when making frozen products. These are all very desirable for you bakers and you food technologists. And it's highly soluble, which means it's easy to use in liquid products. Matsutani has been developing the ingredient for 15 years and offers it under the Astria brand. Okay, and the company received a letter of no objection from the FDA about its generally being regarded as safe status in 2014. And here's the other thing. We have lots of know-how about the product, the safety data, formulation data. There are a couple of companies that can do it with the same levels of quality as us. As pioneers in allulose, we see this competition as a good thing because attracting followers means that you have a good product. So, here's the thing. When I look at Cycos or D-Cycos, what it is a low-energy monounsaccharide that's a single-molecule sugar present in small quantities in natural products. It was first identified in wheat more than 70 years ago. But it's actually, D-Cycos is actually a derivative of D-fructose, which is an epimer of fructose, not getting into organic chemistry with you here before I tune some of you out. So it's a derivative of fructose. It was first identified in wheat more than 70 years ago, and it's present in small quantities in agricultural products and commercially prepared carbohydrate complexes. And again, the sweetness of Cycos is 70% of the sweetness of sucrose. Sucrose is your regular table sugar. That is sucrose. And the health benefits of Cycos may include improved insulin resistance, antioxidant enhancement and formation, and hypoglycemic controls. Well, let's see. So, small amounts of Cycos are found in other foods such as figs and raisins. And a new proprietary manufacturing process enables mass production of allulose from corn. Uh-oh, is that GMO corn? So, allulose is 70% as sweet as table sugar, but contains just a tenth of the calories. And here's the sell. Here's the real sell on allulose. 3 teaspoons of table sugar are almost 50 calories. But with allulose, only 5 calories. To be precise, the energy is identical to table sugar, but allulose is not metabolized, by the digestive system, and therefore, its effective calorie value is low, and everybody's looking for lower calories, right? At least those people who still believe in dinosaur nutrition of calories in, calories out. But hey, at the end of the day, calories do matter. So, the benefits of a sugar substitute such as allulose is that it tastes and behaves like a sugar in various applications. Stevia has a distinct flavor, aspartame, also known as NutraSweet, and Splenda, which is sucralose, can't be used in baked goods. From a safety perspective, the FDA has granted GRAS, generally regarded as safe. GRAS is the acronym for generally regarded as safe. It has given it GRAS status. But it's not been approved in Europe. So, resources have been scoured for some research, and some studies were found discussing naturally occurring allulose. In a study, some mice fed with unnaturally high amounts of allulose died. but when normal amounts were administered, the only observable effect was enlarged kidneys and liver. Oh my. Well, it's just like when aspartame or NutraSweet first came out. Unnaturally high amounts given to rodents were found to induce seizure and all of that. I remember that back in the day. And now with allulose, rodents fed unnaturally high amounts died. Oh my. But when normal amounts were administered, normal amounts, the only observable effect was enlarged kidneys and liver. Ouch. So, another consideration often left undiscussed when it comes to low-calorie sweeteners is the adaptation of our society to sweet. At no point in human history have people consumed so many foods with a flavor profile so sweet. This is true, and that's why so many are addicted. All these added sweeteners, whether natural or artificial, are acclimating our taste buds to a flavor profile that reduces the enjoyability of other naturally occurring flavors. This is true. Oranges and apples are sweet, but have an apple after a cup of soda and it won't taste as amazing. So there is actually a company in Europe, Tate and Lyle. They have a product, Dolcia Prima. Is Dolcia Prima allulose the sugar alternative we've all been waiting for? They say, move over, Stevia and Splenda. There's a new sweetener on the block. The brand name is Dolcia Prima, and it's brought to you by the same folks who make the artificial sweetener Splenda. Now, I remember Splenda back in the day when I worked with Dr. Atkins, and it was the new thing in town, and it was amazing, and it was shown not to, you know, have any blood sugar or insulin reaction or anything like that. But we found later that it can be a problem, that it can, in especially susceptible individuals, cause spikes in blood sugar, insulin, and all of that. So we have to be careful. Now, let's see here. According to allulose.org, they say allulose is absorbed by the small intestine, excreted in the urine without being significantly metabolized. A study in 14 healthy adults consuming allulose at 5 to 20 grams reported urinary excretion of allulose at 66 to 79% and low microbial fermentility of allulose in the large intestine. So, gastrointestinal tolerance, let's see. Based on the guidance by Food and Drug, by U.S. Food and Drug Administration, people of all ages can enjoy allulose in moderate amounts. But guess what? There may be a problem. The reason allulose isn't digested is because our bodies lack the necessary enzymes to break the stuff down once it reaches the gut. Which means that if you down more than a few tablespoons, you'll probably be in for some major stomach issues. Bloating, gas, the same general abdominal awfulness that would happen if someone with lactose intolerance chugged a big glass of milk. So, but that's not the only thing. Allulose, while it does have generally recognized a safe status, but we have to consider that the FDA makes GRAS designations based on studies conducted by the manufacturer. And that's not reassuring, is it? So, only time will tell. We have to be careful. You know, that's the fox guarding the hen house. So if you start seeing ads for allulose, let's see. Let's see what it does to the gut. Is it going to be similar to maybe the reaction of sugar alcohols or even a lactose intolerance? Bloating, gas, all of that. Will there be some fermentability in the large bowel since it's not being absorbed in the small intestine? All of these are questions to be answered. But meanwhile, we're told that it's a low-calorie sweetener. All right. On to some further news. Mealtimes matter to weight and health, as well as what's on your menu when you eat impacts risks for obesity and disease. And this is an article coming out of the British Journal of Nutrition. Evidence review links irregular eating to weight gain and disease. So, circadian rhythms are biological clocks occur in brain and other organs and affect metabolic processes linked to weight gain, diabetes, and heart disease. There were two teams of British, Dutch, and Swiss scientists that recently reviewed the available evidence on how meal patterns affect health by influencing our circadian rhythms. These two European teams found substantial evidence linking irregular eating to weight gain and ill health. And both evidence reviews found that meal timing influences circadian rhythms in key organs. And they found evidence linking irregular eating to having a bigger body mass index and greater risk for metabolic syndrome, diabetes, and obesity. And the scientist says, Dr. Gerda Pott, when asked how to eat, when should we eat, she quotes, "There seems to be some truth in saying eat breakfast like a king, lunch like a prince, and dinner like a pauper. However, she acknowledged that there is some uncertainty because, quote, although the evidence suggests that eating more calories later in the evening is associated with obesity, we are still far from understanding whether our energy intake should be distributed equally across the day or whether breakfast should contribute the greatest proportion of calories followed by lunch and dinner. But as we know in real life, many people can't easily stick to a regular schedule of three balanced meals a day. And it's not uncommon to skip meals, eat on the go, graze through the day before sitting down to possibly a late dinner. It could be a big dinner. So irregular eating meal patterns can be a problem. So if most people are eating late because they didn't have time to eat earlier in the day, or say they skip breakfast, so they've got to be ravenous by lunch. They maybe eat something for lunch, but they don't have much time. So they really put it off till dinner. And dinner can happen late, and it could be big. Or if we've really not eaten all day long, or really are having irregular meal times all day long, besides messing with our bowel habits, which it will, it messes up our circadian rhythms. When we're digesting while we're sleeping, we're not going to necessarily sleep all that well. But the other reason that late eating or eating a big dinner quite late could be is that you don't have enough time to fast overnight. There is an advantage to sleep time when we're fasting for as much as 12 or 13 hours before we break the fast. That's called breakfast. So you have to consider if that's the advantage in having such a big overnight fast in terms of weight maintenance, maintaining a healthy weight, or helping to promote weight loss. When we eat a late dinner, say we're eating at 8 or 9 o'clock and then we're up at 6 or 7 and having breakfast, it's only maybe 8 or 9 hours that have gone by. Your blood sugar and insulin haven't had time to recalibrate and come back down to normal, right? So, and if we're eating at the end of the day and we're ravenous, you know, we're probably carb loading then too. So we're getting even bigger spikes in blood sugar and insulin overnight. And all the more reason you need more of a 12 or a 13 hour fast overnight before having some breakfast to really be able to regulate your blood sugar and insulin. For that to really be able to come low. Because insulin, as you know, is a fat storage hormone. You want that down to zero by the time you're fasting when you wake up for breakfast. If you're already on a low-carb diet, all the better. You could probably have a later meal then if it's low on carbohydrate because you're not causing those spikes in blood sugar and insulin. What these researchers also found is that irregular work hours also hurt. Like irregular meals, inconsistent working hours can raise the risk of metabolic syndrome, cardiovascular disease, and cancer. So last year, a scientific team from Brazil looked for evidence on the health effects of late and inconsistent work shifts. Their evidence review found that irregular eating patterns probably raise the risk of heart disease, high blood pressure, obesity, metabolic syndrome, and excessive consumption of carbs. And that could be the reason for all these risk factors that come into play. And junky diets promote heavy dinners. In addition to the timing of meals, the European teams also reviewed research on meal frequency. What they found, studies showing that junky diets with lots of empty calories, like the standard American diet, the SAD diet, make people more likely to skip breakfast and down most of their calories later in the day. That finding provides even more motivation to favor whole nutrient-dense foods, avoiding takeout, packaged foods, and all of that. The trick is to resist the allure of guilty pleasures long enough for the desire to indulge to pass. So, this is what's been found. And we're coming upon holiday season. Let me remind you the foods that are most addictive. Eating these foods begets more craving for these foods. I'm going to list them. 13 of them. Pizza. Chocolate. And the reason these foods are addictive, these high-calorie foods that are processed and contain excessive amounts of sugar. Here are the top. Pizza. Chocolate, packaged cookies, ice cream, French fries, cheeseburgers, soda, that's regular soda, not diet soda, cake, cheese, bacon, fried chicken, rolls, and popcorn, the most highly addictive foods. I want to thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.